Okay, ladies, you will find at your table the next handout there. It has a big light bulb on the front. You all are tremendous listeners. I appreciate that very much. You're right with me and enjoy that very much. This lesson is going to be a little different. This series was first done when my husband became senior pastor at Morningside Baptist Church there in Greenville, South Carolina, and I taught a ladies' Sunday school class as an elective. And so I've tried to condense the material, so that's why we're going so fast and running late and so forth, trying to get through. There was lots of material, but this lesson I gave in two separate times, and it comes from books that you can get. And so these are not my own thoughts primarily. These come from two different books. I would highly recommend them to you. You'll see them at the end of your handout there. One is called For Women Only. You may have heard of that, but that book opened my eyes to how men think. It's a tremendous book. So if you don't have that one, I would suggest you get it for your library. The other one also is very good. It's called Every Woman's Battle. And it talks, its main focus is sexual integrity. And it comes from the premise, we always think men have sexual issues. Do women have sexual issues? Well, certainly they do. And so that's, we will discuss the first half of the lesson this time from the book For Women Only, and then we'll go into a little bit of what Shannon Etheridge talks about in Every Woman's Battle. So that is where this lesson is coming from. For Women Only was written after the author had conducted spoken and written interviews with more than 1,000 men. If you're interested in the entire survey or more about it, you can find it still on the website there. And Shanti, I guess how you, I don't know how you say all these names, but the lady that conducted these surveys didn't want men's outward behavior. What she was going after was their inner thoughts and emotions that led to the outward behavior. And she writes, most are things he wished that women knew and they don't know how to tell us, or they just had no clue. You really don't know that? And so these are survey questions that were answered by a lot of men. So these are their thoughts. And I want to tell you, we don't think alike. We just don't. And those of you who are married probably are very aware we don't think alike. And it can cause conflict lots of times just because we don't think the same. So we're going to put on our thinking caps a little bit, and I want you, instead of thinking like you would think, I would like you to answer how you think the men would think, okay? So number one, think about, this is what the men were asked to do. Think about what these two negative experiences would be like: to feel alone and unloved in the world, or to feel inadequate and disrespected by everyone. If you were forced to choose one, which would you prefer? Would you rather feel alone and unloved or inadequate and disrespected? Now, how would the man answer that question? Joel? Yes, inadequate and disrespected. 3 out of 4 men said they would rather feel alone and unloved than to be disrespected. Now, women are just the opposite. because we would rather feel loved. And the Bible tells us that. If you'll read in that Ephesians 5 passage, the last verse, it talks, men, you see that you love your wives, and women, you see to it that you respect your husbands. And in fact, the lady said, many men had a hard time answering this question because they appeared to equate the two. In other words, if a man feels disrespected, he feels unloved. So how do I know as a woman if I cross that disrespect line? She says there's one way to know, and that you check for anger. Because a man will become angry if he feels disrespected. And she says, if you are in a conflict with the man in your life, do you think it's legitimate to break down and cry? Most of us would probably answer yes. But let me ask another question. In that same conflict, do you think it legitimate for your man to get very angry? We would say no. But that's just a difference in thinking. See, we react differently to feeling unloved. All right. Women often tend to want to control things, which unfortunately men interpret as being disrespected. So ladies, if we know God tells us in His Word that we're to respect the men in our lives, and young women, you've got dads, we have bosses who are men. How can we show men the respect that they need to be shown? Here are a few ideas. What we can do. Respect means to be in awe of or to revere. It's not a matter of just bland regard. We are supposed to highly value the men in our lives and show it. And we do that by respecting his judgment, his knowledge, his opinions, his decisions. Because a man in his workplace, his colleagues will rarely tell him what to do. Men have a collaboration lots of times that women don't. And they don't cross that line. They don't make each other feel disrespected. We need to respect his abilities because they need to figure things out for themselves. A man has a challenge and conquer orientation. Have you ever heard of that? They need to feel affirmed and that we respect his ability to do this, to figure it out. And I personally feel that that's why men do not like to ask for directions when they get lost. Because a woman will say, well, why don't you stop and ask for directions if you don't know where we are, right? No, I'm sure if we go down, you know how it goes. You've been in the car with this. But I think this is the reason. They like to figure things out for themselves. They like this challenge, which is totally different than our thinking. We need to show respect in the way we communicate. Because if they hear even an offhand remark, and it's easy for them sometimes, I've found through the years, to interpret something as disrespect when we didn't even mean it that way. That's happened between my husband and me before, that I would say something that I totally didn't mean in a disrespectful way, but I could tell he was a little bit mad about it. All right, so what did that clue me to? Okay, there's something that came across, either in the way I said it or what I said, that seemed disrespectful to him. And if they hear disappointment in our voices at something they've done, if we nag or accuse or attack in a grocery store, have you heard a woman attack her husband before? I have. Oh my, I thought, don't you know what you're doing to your man here? And one of the greatest things we can do to show respect is in public. How do you treat the men in your life in public? And this was one of the greatest things the surveyor said, that Shanti said. The male ego is terribly fragile. And it's not necessarily, we think of ego as a pride issue in a man. She says that's not what it is. It's a secret feeling of inadequacy that they have. And so when we tease them in public, when we talk negatively about them behind their backs, all that shows to them, I disrespect you. So what would she, do you ever praise your husband in public? Give a good opinion of him in public? That's what he needs. And we need to show respect in our assumptions. And what she meant by that is, don't assume things about your husband. And this is terribly hard for me. I'll just be honest with you. Because we assume our husbands need to be reminded. Haven't you done that yet? And we need to presume the best. There may be a totally good reason why he hasn't done that yet. He may have different priorities, or lots of times they just haven't been able to handle one more thing. Don't assume he's not choosing to help with the kids or cleaning. Ladies, men don't see dirt like we see it. They don't see mess, most men. Now, there are some, when I say most here, you've got to assume that always there are some who are a little different. But most men don't see things the way we see it. Our janitor at church, I've been the church pianist there for almost 30 years at our church. We have this lovely black ebony-colored grand piano. And it always is covered with dust. And I went to our facilities man one time and asking if there was somebody that was assigned to dust the piano. And he goes, I never thinks it looks too bad. See, that's the difference. So what I did, instead of disrespecting our janitor, I brought my little microfiber dust cloth that I hide in the piano bench, and then I can dust it when I want to. Okay, don't assume it's his fault or because of him. It's easy for us to assign unloving motives to our men. That could actually be traced back to something that I've inadvertently said or done. And another thing in respecting men, don't ever say, I'm sorry I made you feel such and such. Because men do not like to be told how they should be feeling. Okay. So those are just some ideas of things we can do to be respectful. Question number two, regardless of how successful you are in your current job, which statement most closely describes your feelings about your work life? Number one, I try to perform well and look as competent as possible, when inside I sometimes feel insecure and am concerned about others' opinions of me and my abilities. Two, I always feel secure in my abilities and rarely consider what others think of me. How would they answer? One or two?
I think two.
Number one. 2/3 admitted being insecure about others' opinions of them, even though they appeared confident on the outside. When doing something new or unfamiliar, 4 out of 5 men are insecure, but they don't want it to show. Because a man wants to avoid feeling humiliated at all costs. This surveyor found out that a man always feels he's being judged. One man said, "We think about what others think about us all the time." And they seem to balance this imposter complex. They feel like they're being imposter because they say, "I really don't know how to do this, but I want to do this." That challenge orientation there. Many men work long hours. Sometimes they're necessary for a job, but not always. Sometimes, in the guy's mind, it's an insurance against failure when he works long hours, or fear of falling behind, or fear of being cut from the team. Men look for affirmation on the job and at home. They secretly worry, ladies, that they don't know how to be a good husband, that they don't know how to be a good father or a provider or a handyman. This one really struck me because it said, men said they judge themselves and feel that other men judge them based on the happiness and respect of their wives. A man may withdraw from taking an active role in the life of his wife and kids if he doesn't think he can do it well or if he won't be affirmed in it. And so if I am constantly focused on the wrong thing my husband is doing, I'm actually cutting off the lifeline for him to want to do it right. And only 1 in 4 men in this survey felt actively appreciated by his family. 44% said they felt unappreciated at home. And ladies, this is dangerous because if a man is not getting the affirmation and the appreciation he needs at home, he may look for it someplace else. Because there could be a very attractive, interesting, affirming lady associate at work. Or he may go to watching sports where he can feel the thrill of competitive rush, or he may retreat to his workshop or his office where he feels he does have some control over something and be appreciated. And if a man feels unappreciated, he can slip into pornography very easily if he feels unappreciated at home. So what can we do? Home needs to be a haven for him where he doesn't feel I have to perform. One husband said, "I want my wife to know and understand my weaknesses, failings, shortcomings, and still want me." Some of these others you can read through on your own. I've put them there. This has to do with a question. We'll just go through what we can do about the answers to these questions. Suppose your wife earned enough to support your family's lifestyle. Would you still feel a compulsion to provide for your family? Yes or no? Yes. And they say even single men, even though they don't have anybody to provide for but themselves, still feel this way. 3 out of 4 felt about it. Men feel powerful when they provide. They want to be dependent on. For a man, bringing home a paycheck is love talk, pure and simple. yet, that's where they feel like they can fail, too. That they can't provide for you. And ladies, this is why it's so difficult for men who have retired sometimes, because that's taken away from them. Or if your husband has lost his job, often those men can withdraw, become very depressed because of, they have this inner drive. I need to be providing for my family. And yet when they can't, it makes them feel less of a man somehow. And it really hits them hard. So what can women do to help relieve the pressure? Don't come home constantly with huge shopping bags. Don't spend money unnecessarily. Realize that if you make more money than your husband at a job, that might be painful. He may never tell it to you, but that's something you shouldn't tease about. I make more money than you do, you know, that type of thing. And don't make him choose in his mind to have to try and be a good provider and spend family time at home. Because good Christian men have this pressure on them all the time. I have this compulsion that I need to provide for my family, yet I know I need to be home with my family and taking care of them. And so men often feel in between a rock and a hard place because of that. Don't complain about the amount of money he brings home, because he will internalize that. He will sense your disappointment, and he'll take it as a personal failure to provide. So what if your husband isn't making enough money right now for your family? Can you take it to the Lord instead of nagging your husband about it? Because God's the one that says he'll provide for you, right? And thank your husband regularly for providing, because he'll forget quickly. This next section I'm going to skip. It's a more sensitive sexual issue about how men think about certain things. And so if you mothers want to delve into this with your daughters, you may. If you prefer not to, then don't. But we are not going to deal with it here, but it's here, because it's how men think. But we're going to go on and skip that entire section for now. The section about feeling energetic and looking good, how men feel about that, we're not going to discuss it here just for sake of time. They don't feel it's important that you look the way you look when you first got married. What their thought was when they come through is, she is making an effort. That is the essence of it. Because if you read through that, the man will say, this is not something I will talk with about to my wife, because it may hurt her feelings, and most men will not talk about it. So the author says, don't even ask your husband about this section, because he won't want to tell you the truth about it. He will not want to hurt your feelings. But they do feel loved when you take care of yourself. And D of under 2 says this. The man says, I want and need to be proud of you. Several men said something like this. Every man has an innate competition with other men, and our wives are part of that. Every man wants other men to think that they did well, that he did well. And so we can do that by the way we stay energetic. And it's not having an hourglass figure that they want. This isn't what the men said. They want you to have enough energy and physical strength that you feel like doing things with them, because that's how men talk. We as women like to sit on a couch and communicate with our men. Men don't. They communicate shoulder to shoulder as you work, as you play. And so if a wife doesn't have enough physical energy or stamina to be part of that, that's hard on a man. There was one open-ended question that they were asked that they could answer any way they wanted. What is the one thing that you wish your wife knew, but you feel you can't explain to her or tell her? And this was, the response was, they really wanted their wives to know that they loved them. How much I love her. You see, the men could have vented on this question. They could have said anything they wanted derogatorily or anything about the wives, but they wanted the women to know, this, I love you. But they rarely feel successful in knowing how to really communicate that to us. And a lot of it comes because we speak different love languages. One man wrote, there are a lot of men out there who are mediocre simply because their wives will not support them and bring them to greatness. And there are a lot of mediocre men who are destined to become great men who are becoming great men because their wives love and support them. This book is fascinating, ladies. You young women, I hope you'll get it for your libraries because it will just give you insights into how they think. And really, it's surprising because we think differently. The rest of this lesson now is from the other book, Every Woman's Battle, and it deals with sexual integrity issues. And I wanted to bring this up. I'm not going to delve into sensitive material. That's not my point. But I want to give you a feel, again, of the differences between men and women. There was a man who wrote the foreword to Every Woman's Battle, and he says, a man's battle for sexual integrity begins with a lustful or a wandering eye. And I don't know if you've ever read the statement in the book of Job. Now, who was he? God said he was one of the most righteous men of his day. And yet he wrote in Job 31 and verse 1, I have made a covenant with my eyes. How then could I gaze at a virgin? Now that might shock us coming from a spiritually minded man. But this is how men work. For women, the battle for sexual integrity often begins in a heart full of disappointment. In a heart full of disappointment. Because, ladies, we can become disappointed in men. We can become disappointed in our circumstances, in our life, in our money, in our kids, in our future. And we can become disappointed at God. And when we allow our minds to go that way, we are just opening ourselves up to have sexual integrity problems. This next handout section here, I'm just going to read through quickly. While a man needs mental, emotional, and spiritual connection, his physical needs tend to be in the driver's seat, and his other needs ride along in the back. Emotional needs drive women. 2, men are capable of giving their bodies to a partner without feeling the need to give their mind, heart, or soul, whereas women are relatively unable to do that. While men are primarily aroused by what they see with their eyes, women prefer to talk and relate, hear loving comments. That's why that woman in Proverbs use the kind of language she did with the young men. That's the way women prefer to relate. Men have a cyclical need for physical pleasure. Women long for attention and affection on a regular, recurring basis. A woman becomes far more vulnerable to an affair when her emotional needs are neglected over and over. So, men definitely can have sexual integrity issues, right? And women can definitely have sexual integrity issues. But what's going to make it worse for me to keep pure, to stay away from sexual trouble, affairs, whatever you want to call it? And what I'm trying to say here, ours isn't just by looking at men. That women don't do that. This whole idea of this book, it's emotional, ladies. It's emotional. How we think, how we become disappointed. So these are some things listed here. The next section is, how can my struggle be intensified? What can I do to make my struggle in sexual issues less? That's what this section is about. We often only think, well, I'm not involved with my body sexually, so I'm good. I'm good with sexual integrity. But what her premise of the book is, probably not. Because that isn't how we women function. Rarely do we understand the emotional progression of relationships before it's too late and we've been sucked into an affair of the heart. You see, lots of times with women, it's not an outward physical affair. It's all right here. And if you would read this book, she starts out, "At one time in my life, I had an affair with 5 men. And you go, what? But she talked about she was having an affair with the man that was described in that romance novel. An emotional affair. And that's how it often happens with women. A woman can jeopardize her emotional integrity long before her body becomes vulnerable to temptation. Another struggle that we have is that we focus on things that are lawful or allowed instead of running everything through the filter of love. Do you remember what Jesus did? How many commandments are there? Out of all the commandments that are given in the Old Testament, how many do we know? 10. But when Jesus in the New Testament took those laws, how many did he condense it to? 2. And what is the key word in those 2 commandments? You'll love the Lord your God with all your heart, and you'll love your neighbor as yourself. Now, when she talks about things being allowed, she says, sift it through what is allowed, law versus love. While it is lawful for a married woman to flirt with a man, is it truly the loving thing to do? While it is lawful for a single woman to flirt with a married man, is it the loving thing to do, or will it benefit him in a righteous way? There's no law against flattering clothes, but what's our motive in wearing them? Is it to build others up, to build up our ego, or to cause a man to fall? We have freedom of speech, but are the words we choose in the best interest to the men we speak to? Or is it to support my own private agenda? Do our thoughts think the highest good for others, or do we have an emotional craving that I'm trying to satisfy? Or a sexual desire? Is the attention and affection we may want to express to a man going to edify him or cause him to stumble and fall into temptation? Another way that we can not help our struggle for integrity is we compare ourselves and our husbands to other people. You see, when we make a comparison, that means we've got somebody up on the top and we have somebody down here. And I can either think in a prideful way when I compare myself to somebody else and build myself up, or I can really tear myself down when I compare myself. And then when we do that, we can become disappointed in who God made us or what He's given us. So comparisons just aren't good. Because if we have vanity and pride in our lives, we can feel very attractive, and it can give a feeling of power to a woman, and that can open us up to temptation. Or with the other, we can feel disappointed in with what God has given us. And so we can begin feeling like I'm a victim here. And whenever we start feeling that, we can become much more vulnerable to that man that shows me a little bit of attention and thinks that I'm okay and pretty, and he affirms who I am. And so then we get caught with our sexual integrity in that way. When we compare our husbands to others, we show a disrespect for our husband's uniqueness. And we think, well, why can't he be like so-and-so? And then it's easy for a woman to entertain more thoughts of so-and-so until our minds are compromised. You see, ladies, what I'm trying to get across here and what she in her book is, a lot of our affairs of the heart or lack of sexual integrity happen right in our minds and in our emotions. How else can I compromise my integrity? We feel we are mature enough to watch any movie, any television show, read any book, listen to any music, surf any websites without being affected in a negative way. And we become desensitized. It's interesting, the author conducted an experiment, and she edited a 12-minute clip of the visual or sound sexual innuendos that were from prime TV shows. And what she asked her audience to do, whenever you hear one of those bad sexual innuendos, I want you to raise your hand. So she starts playing these innuendos. And the audience, the first few of those, oh yeah. But she said as they got further into it, their minds kind of shut off from those innuendos and they got caught up with the humor and the plot and everything else that was going on until the people in the audience only caught 12 to 15 of the 41 innuendos. Now, what was she saying? We can become desensitized. That's why it's so important what we put in our minds, because we will, no matter how strong we think we are spiritually, we can desensitize ourselves. Because everything we choose to take in goes into our heart. And what does the Bible say? Our heart is the source of everything else. Everything flows out of our heart. So a good rule of thumb is never to watch a movie or TV program or read a book that you wouldn't want others to know about. That's a good rule of thumb. If I wouldn't want my husband to know about that, if I wouldn't want my mom to know about that, if I wouldn't want my dad, then don't do it. It's a good rule of thumb. The next one is about what kind of man we would like to have if our husbands were to die. And they're not saying here you don't plan for the future because your husband may pass on before you. That's not what it's saying. It's saying, I kind of wish my husband would die because I deserve better. That's a pride issue. Or maybe the next one will appreciate me more than this one does. We feel rejected. Or I hope the next one will be more romantic or better in bed, however you want to put it. That's a lust issue. Or I'll be able to enjoy my life a little more without having to cater to him. That's a selfishness issue. Or I'm just tired of trying to communicate. I'm tired of trying to understand him. I'm tired of trying to keep our marriage together. And she in her book said that one of Satan's favorite strategies for convincing women to cross the line between temptation and sin is to say, well, because I've been tempted, I must have already sinned, so why resist? Now, is being tempted a sin, yes or no? Is being tempted a sin? No. Because Jesus said he in all points was tempted like as we are, but without sin. But what a temptation does, it lays before us a choice. All right, I've been tempted, so what am I going to do with it now? Women can draw the line between attraction and acting out on that attraction. It's normal to feel attracted to multiple people. It is not normal to attach yourself to multiple people. If I'm going to go through a dangerous area of town, I usually lock my doors in my car, in my vehicle. What would happen if I decide just to put one lock down? Is that going to keep me safe? Probably not. Or how about I drive through the dangerous part of town with just two or three locks down on my door? No, you want all four locks down. Her point in the book is you have got to guard every area of your life or you're not protected in a sexual area. So she talks about the thoughts, our minds, we've got to guard. The words we speak, we need to guard. We need to guard our hearts and we need to guard our bodies. In all those areas, we can be compromising. And I want quickly just to go through the thoughts part because that has been the main emphasis today. If you would read her book, you could read the other three about the words, about your body, about all those. But you remember what David prayed in Psalm 139? Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. Our minds need to be guarded. Whether we think about our husbands in a positive or negative way comes from our thoughts. And this speaker, she saw an experiment done where the man who was presenting the talk brought several people up on stage, and he asked them to think about the thing in their life that was just brought them the most joy, the most wonderful thing they could think of. And he had them stick their arms out like this, two or three of them on the stage. He says, I want you to think about the most wonderful thing in your life or that you've ever experienced. What has brought you the most joy? And he went up and would try and push their arms down. And he could not get their arms down. Then he let them rest a minute, and he says, now I want you to focus on what was the most horrendous thing that you would consider in your life. The worst thing that ever happened to you. What happened to their arms when he came to push them? They could easily go down. And we don't believe in Christians as positive thinking, but to a certain extent, the way we do think of things affects the strength we have. And so what she's saying, if you think positively about your husband, you're going to have less trouble having sexual integrity issues. And there's a way we can resist temptation as we guard our minds. We resist it at the gate. And again, this has to do with what I take into my mind or the fantasies I have. What do I visualize in my mind? So she said, ask yourself these questions before reading that magazine or book, listening to that music, watching the TV show. Does this glamorize ideas or situations that oppose my Christian values? And if it passes that test, then I would challenge you, as she says, go on and ask more questions. Is it uplifting to my spirit? Does it make me grateful for what God has given me, or does it make me depressed and dissatisfied? Does this cause me to think about things that build my character, or does it tear down? And ladies, we can mentally rehearse what we're going to do when a temptation comes. Have you ever tried that? Ahead of time thinking, if I see this man at work that I'm attracted to, this is what I'm going to do. And we think of it ahead of time. That'll help us say, I'm going to do something else. I'm going to redirect my thoughts. Because we cannot initially stop the thoughts that come into our mind. A thought pops in there, right? Okay, it does. And Satan plants thoughts in our mind sometimes. He can do that. But it's ours to do with after that happens. When that thought there, what's going to happen? This one I thought was so cute that she said, and I've used it myself, is rather than eyeballing an attractive man, avoid the second look and simply say to yourself, thank you, Lord, for your awesome creation, and go on about your business. Because that thought will pop into our minds. You'll walk by this man and you'll say, wow, he was a good-looking man. Can married women still do that? Oh, you better believe it. So what am I going to do with that thought? Okay, well, thank God that he was good-looking, or meditate on the scriptures that you've memorized to keep your focus, or sing praise to God. Thank him for something. Thank him for Christ's blood, or pray for his wife, or pray for the wife he might have someday, or pray for your husband or the husband you might have someday. Or they say, simply do the next thing. If you are going to lunch with your girlfriend, don't stand there googling-eyed at the guy. Just go to lunch, or were you on your way to work, then go. And we need to renew our minds. We need to guard our hearts. And I'd like you to fill out your little chart on there before we go. Have you ever gotten Velcro open in your wash machine? What happened? Everything sticks to it. And when you tear stuff off, it ruins stuff too. This lady says, our hearts are like that Velcro strip. If we leave them unprotected, it's easy for us just to get caught with everything that we're attracted to. It's one thing to determine how far is too far physically in a premarital or extramarital relationship, but it's another to answer how far is too far emotionally. She lists 5 stages of emotional connection, and what I want you to do is figure out the description of it on the right-hand side. They're not equal going across. So you're going to need to draw a line. The least stage of emotional connection is attention. So what would attention be? My eye is caught. I just notice the person. That's the least amount of emotional connection. Attraction, how about that? Yes, drawn toward, but we're not familiar with that person. Now, we're starting to get a little bit more emotionally connected here with affection, which is this one. To my best recollection, I forgot my key, but I think it's expression of feelings by displaying favor. Because when we have an affection for somebody, it's easy for us to want to give them a little gift or want to do something nice for them. But then arousal and attachment is when I become romantically stirred, and we definitely want to stay away from that, except if it's with our husbands. And then affairs and addiction, which means I just give in to my desire, submit to what the man wants. And of course, she goes on in her book, she has some stoplights. If you're single and if you're married, which of these should you be in if you're in that stage of your life? It's more permissible for a single girl with a single man to express affection. A married woman shouldn't do that to anybody besides her husband. Shouldn't be giving gifts, shouldn't be talking, flirting. And then, of course, our words and guarding my body. The author, in her acknowledgement pages, lists those that she's grateful to as she wrote her book. And her opening statement was this, and it really struck me because she said, "My deepest gratitude goes first to Jesus Christ, the lover I've longed for all my life." Now, ladies, whether we're single, married, widowed, whatever, until we come to that point of satisfaction in our lives, we're all vulnerable. Knowing that no man will ever ultimately satisfy, our husbands will never ultimately satisfy. No relationship will. Only Jesus Christ can fill that hole. So as you look to him as the love of your life, you'll have victory. The last page is for you to do if you want to. If you moms want to take this quiz, it'll give you some ideas perhaps if you're compromising in certain areas of your sexual life. And that is for you before God to answer if you want to. You do not have to do that. But I would challenge you, it'll make you think. Okay? Let's pray. And would it be appropriate for me to pray for the food as we do? All right, Father, this is a session I haven't wanted to bring. But I think it's necessary as far as biblical women to understand some of these things, to help us to be Christian women of integrity in sexual issues, in how we deal with men, in how we think. So would you help us? Thank you for these women who've given up their Saturday to come, for the food that they've prepared, for the lovely decorations and everything to make things so nice for us. We give you thanks. Bless our food and fellowship now. In Jesus' name, amen.